prepare for a true revolution.
Actually, you can prove God exists.
Questioning tradition, because what you've been taught isn't always true.
The truth will set you free.
Yes, sir. The truth will set you free. Truth Revolution, where faith meets reason. And we contend that you don't have to get rid of one to enjoy the other. With me is Jeff. I'm Dave from Revolution Church.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Intelligent design.
Intelligent design.
Science, evolution. Mm-hmm. Were we designed? Did we evolve? That's our question this morning.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to answer it, I'm pretty sure.
We usually don't beat around the bush too much here.
Uh-uh.
And last week we talked about evolution.
Right.
And so if you're hearing us say things about evolution here, you might want to listen to last week's show. Hit us up, truthrevolution.tv. You can check out last week's show there to hear what we had to say about evolution. Because we didn't say that we loved it. We didn't say we hated it. You'll have to see exactly what we said.
We just presented the evidence.
So, anyway, you're going to have to listen to that one. But today we're talking about intelligent design. And intelligent design is basically the concept that there are parts of our bodies or parts of the universe that could not have come about by chance. They had to be designed, had to be directed. Yeah, Dave, how much have you heard about intelligent design?
Is that a trick question? Because I've been hanging around you a lot.
Well, okay, besides me.
Besides you. Actually, before I started going to Revolution Church, I really didn't hear much about intelligent design.
Yeah, I think a lot of times what people have heard about intelligent design is in the news where it's talking about these crazy Christians are trying to get intelligent design in schools and they're trying to get science classes out and ID classes in.
Those hayseeds.
Yeah, and they, they talk about, oh, this is just creationism warmed over and, you know, they're trying to, I don't know, a bunch of stuff like that. Now, the reality is we want to examine stuff because we're all about truth. Our tagline, faith and reason meet. So we want faith and we want reason to come together. We want to use our brains.
Right.
We don't want to believe stuff just because my granddaddy told me.
Right.
Although I love my granddaddy. But
if you want the truth, look for it.
Look for it. You study and
don't
you
just
learn.
Yeah, don't just accept it.
And so we're talking about intelligent design today. Let's let's just have all our listeners throw everything that they've assumed about it out the window.
Okay, clean slate.
Because in 2004, there's a man named Anthony Flew. Anthony Flew was one of the world's foremost atheists. He is basically what Billy Graham is to the Christians, all right?
Wow.
Like, he was the man. He was, I mean, he was an atheist. He would debate. He debated a lot of my professors.
Mm-hmm.
He was the atheist to talk to. And he basically recanted his atheism.
Really?
Yes, he did. He said that he kind of made this worldwide statement, and it made worldwide news when he said, "My commitment to atheism is gone." What he cited to change his view of atheism was intelligent design. He said, "American intelligent design theorists have shifted his view of whether or not there's a God because he looked at the evidence and, wow, there must be a designer to all this stuff." So now, just to give you an idea, that would be akin to Billy Graham coming on the news, making an announcement, "I've realized that I've been wrong. Christianity is not true. And I just want everyone to know there's no evidence, so I'm leaving Christianity."
Don't do it, Billy.
But Anthony Flew, he was the atheist, and he left atheism because of intelligent design. So, you know, we can't just, you know, whether you're listening, whether you're an atheist or a Christian or just you're not really sure, you can't just throw intelligent design under the bus. Because this very intellectual, very smart man was convinced by it.
Right. And did he used to argue against intelligent design?
He used to argue against Christianity in
general. Okay.
And, you know, when intelligent design started coming out, he would argue against it. But as the evidence got stronger and stronger, he eventually said, "Ooh, I can't defeat this. This is the real deal here." So
that's good news.
Yeah, you know, Stephen Meyer, he was one of the proponents, one of the guys who started intelligent design. And he says British readers have learned about the theory of intelligent design mainly from media reports about the United States court battles over the legality of teaching students about it. And according to most of the reports, ID is a faith-based alternative to evolution and solely based on religion. But is this accurate? As one of the architects of the theory, I know it isn't. So here's the other thing we got to throw out. The first one we threw out was that it's not smart. Okay? Because Anthony Flew, this intelligent atheist, started believing in God because of it. The second thing we want to throw out is that it's just some religious dogma that Christians are using to try to get evolution out of the schools.
Right.
As a matter of fact, and we're going to talk about this later if we have time, intelligent design isn't necessarily opposed to evolution when you talk about Darwinian evolution,
right?
The means of evolution. Okay, so it's not necessarily opposed to it. The theory of intelligent design is simply, and let me quote this. This is from the Discovery Institute. This place is they've done a lot of work on it. The theory of intelligent design holds that certain features of the universe and of living things are best explained by an intelligent cause, not an undirected process such as natural selection. All right, break that apart for me, David. The theory of intelligent design holds that certain features of the universe, what does that mean?
Well, I mean, certain features of the universe don't necessarily have to be some far-out planet or far-out galaxy.
Okay. It could be. It doesn't have to be.
But it doesn't have to be.
Uh-huh.
Could be totally inner space.
Now, yeah, and the next phrase is, and of living things.
Mm-hmm. And inside your body.
Okay, so a lot of, we're going to be talking about biology here.
Uh-huh.
Biology is huge in intelligent design circles. It says they're best explained by an intelligent cause. What does that mean?
Something that
I'm putting him on the spot here, by the way.
Oh, that's okay. Something that directed something towards a particular end.
I like that definition. Something that directed something.
I'm trying to be totally unbiased.
Yeah, basically that's all it is. Some sort of direction, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't intelligent design doesn't even demand God. All it demands is there is some sort of designer who kind of directed this process. Because you have the alternative Darwinian evolution, which says random chance, had all these processes going on, millions of changes, and there was no goal in mind. Just certain things were selected because they were beneficial at the moment.
Right.
So you start developing a tail. And if your tail is not, stop looking behind yourself. It's not really there. You develop a tail, and that tail, if it's no benefit to you, it's not going to be passed along in evolution because there's no it wasn't beneficial. So the people who have the tail aren't necessarily going to pass it along. The people who have a tail that's beneficial, they're going to pass it to their descendants. And so through millions of years, these processes are going to happen, and you're going to get things that are beneficial. But so in evolution, natural selection, Darwinian evolution, there's a lot of undirected processes that happen, and eventually you end up with someone like us. In intelligent design, they say, are there things in your body or in the universe that couldn't have come about by a natural process, by a slow mechanical process? That's kind of the question here. Mm-hmm. The main question is, in intelligent design, if naturalism is false, how could we know? What's naturalism? Does anyone out there know?
Well, naturalism is something that just happens just because it happens.
Yeah, it's close to materialism. Basically, look, all we are is physical parts. Okay, there's not necessarily spiritual stuff. There's no grand designer. It's just you, me, the dirt, and the animals, and things just happen naturally. One cell divided into two cells, and one of those cells was a little stronger than the other one, so the stronger one had better cells come after it, and eventually that one formed humankind, and the weaker cells formed Mizzou fans, and, In that theory, naturalism, everything's physical and there's nothing being directed. In intelligent design, there's some direction. And so if naturalism's false, how would you even know it was false? Because everything we're made up of that we can see, touch, and taste is physical.
Right.
So if there's more to the world than that, if naturalism isn't all there is, how do we even know that? And that's kind of the question intelligent design is answering.
Okay.
If we were designed, how would we even know? And so we need to look at some of the evidences for this. And some of the things that we're going to look at show that we were designed rather than just came about by a natural process. This is going to be fun. This is, okay, Bruce Alberts, this guy is president of the National Academy of Science. Okay, he was, he's not an intelligent design proponent.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's, I'm not sure, but I think he's an atheist.
Okay.
He believes in evolution. He is being quoted here, right? He says, he's just talking about the cell. He's not talking about intelligent design. This was before intelligent design got really popular, okay? He says, the entire cell can be viewed as a factory that contains an elaborate network of interlocking assembly lines. Now, check this out. He says the cell is a factory that contains an elaborate network of interlocking assembly lines, each of which is composed of large protein machines. And then he says, why do we call the large protein assemblies that underlie cell function machines? precisely because, like the machines invented by humans to deal efficiently with the macroscopic world, like our world, these protein assemblies contain highly coordinated moving parts.
Right.
You get, and now what's really funny is in the last few years, you've heard scientists back off of talking like this because of intelligent design.
Uh-huh.
They used to say all the time, oh yeah, our cells are basically machines. They're factories. There's millions of moving parts in your cells, and you have to have all of them working on time in the same direction with the same goal. And intelligent design was like, wait a minute, if that's the case, this had to be directed. And then all of a sudden they're saying, whoa.
Well, that all sounds pretty random to me.
Okay, well, let me give you a better example, okay? you're being facetious. I get it.
Kind of.
Okay, but let me give you a better example here. That guy was just talking about the cell in general.
Right.
I want to talk to you about the bacterial flagellum. These are, okay, you have bacterial cells in your body, and they're all over. And some of these bacterial cells are propelled by rotary engines called flagellar motors.
Okay.
Now we got good vehicles here. All right. Our vehicles, my car can run up to about 6,000 or 7,000 RPMs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what your motorcycle can do, but these things were designed by designers. Okay. Our mm-hmm. cars, our motorcycles, 6,000 or 7,000 RPMs. That's really pretty cool.
Right.
You get some race cars, and they're doing a lot more than that. But do you know what the RPMs are on this bacterial flagellum?
I'm sure you're going to tell me.
100,000 RPMs.
That's a lot.
And it can stop in a quarter turn of the flagellum is this little like wingy thing, this little windy thing off the back end of a bacteria. Okay. And it propels it forward. And this thing's spinning 100,000 RPM, and it can stop in a quarter turn and reverse itself and spin 100,000 RPM in the opposite direction.
Just like that.
Just like that. Do you know what would happen if you tried to do that with your car? Go 100,000 RPM.
Transmission
and
might fall out.
Your transmission would fall out. Your car would break in half. Your car would go your seat would go flying. Your seatbelt would break. I mean, it's just and these have distinct parts. Rotors in this cell in the bacterial flagellum. Rotors, stators, O-rings. It's got bushings. It's got a drive shaft.
Really?
Dead serious, man. We should post a picture of this on the website.
We will.
U-joints. I mean, this thing has everything needed to make, like, a real motor. And what's fascinating about this is it's not just, hey, this bacterial flagellum is a really fast thing, but did you know that if any one of those five pieces was missing, actually, there's 30 pieces in this. If any one of those 30 pieces was missing, it wouldn't work.
Hmm.
It just wouldn't work. Because we look at ourselves, and if you're missing a finger,
right,
you could still work.
Mm-hmm.
But this bacterial flagellum, any one of those pieces missing, and Michael Behe, the biochemist, this guy figured this out. He says all of these 30 parts have to be working in tandem. Remove one of these parts or one of these proteins, and it will not work. This is called irreducible complexity. And what the thing is, this could not have evolved.
Right.
It's impossible because you can't evolve by slow processes. And, hey, you know, I'm just going to develop a drive shaft for no reason.
Right.
Evolution doesn't do things for no reason. You don't just get a tail for no reason if there's no benefit to the tail. But this thing had to develop 30 parts, all which wouldn't matter. They don't make a stinking difference
right.
unless the other 29 parts are there.
Gotcha.
And so for this to have happened, there had to have been a goal in mind. Something had to know, hey, if we take O-rings and U-joints and bushings and a drive shaft and stators and rotors and we put them all together in this order and then we turn them like this, then we'll have a motor.
Isn't that kind of saying like maybe cars evolved out of nothing?
Basically, yeah, it's kind of like saying, yeah, we gave a guy a whole bunch of pieces of metal, and he didn't know what he's going to do with them. He just started throwing them at each other, and they kind of the way they connected, all of a sudden, this car started up, and it was like, rum, bum, 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 and he's like, oh my goodness,
right?
I have a car. No, you have a design in mind, so you put these pieces together, right? And the same thing with this bacterial flagellum. It doesn't just happen on accident. You can't get this by natural processes. Now, coming up after this break, I suppose we'll do a Bible contradiction.
Yes, we will. I've got one prepared, actually.
But we're going to talk about a mouse trap.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about whether or not this evolution can fit in with this, and whether or not this actually stops people from studying science, because that's one of the accusations.
Interesting stuff coming up. Hang with us.
TruthRevolution.tv.
Revolution.
And welcome back to Truth Revolution, where faith meets reason. I'm Dave. With me is Pastor Jeff from Revolution Church. And today we've been talking about
intelligent design. Yeah, hey, Revolution Church starts at 10:15 this morning.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty soon.
So go ahead and throw some pants on, underwear, coat, whatever you need, and come on over.
Please do, before you come on over.
We love questions. We love discussing things. Today, actually, we're doing a new series. We started last week. We're doing a new series. Today, we're talking about Facebook's stupid statuses
right.
that people put on Facebook and
mm-hmm.
Twitter. That's what we're talking about at Revolution Church. We're going to look at one. It's pretty funny. And we're going to compare it to what God says about these ideas in the Bible. Just kind of a neat idea. Anyway, we're talking about intelligent design, though, on the mm-hmm. Truth Revolution Radio
right.
Show. If you have a question or a challenge, truthrevolution.tv, and you can send in questions there.
Right.
If you look in the upper right-hand corner of truthrevolution.tv, you'll see a line that says Ask Questions. You'll also see one that says When and Where. So check out truthrevolution.tv. You can find out directions to the church. You can find out how to ask us a question or send in a challenge or whatever. So anyway, back to irreducible complexity. I was talking about the bacterial flagellum as mm-hmm. a good example that certain things in our body had to have been designed. They couldn't have just happened by chance. I want everyone to think about a mousetrap, okay? Just not like these complex mousetraps we have nowadays where it like traps the mouse alive and
right.
you know you release it in a very humane way. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about like the death trap mousetrap.
Snap.
Snap, you know, like break a little kid's finger mm-hmm. mousetrap, right? We all had these growing up. You know, this mousetrap is basically made up of five different pieces, right? You've got the platform that it all sits on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got the hammer and the spring that pulls it all back.
Right.
The catch and the holding bar, right? These
okay.
five parts make up a mousetrap. Now, here's what's interesting about this mousetrap. I want you to go to that mousetrap and take one of those pieces away and try to make it work.
Not going to happen.
It's not going to work, is it? I mean, if you take the spring away, it's not going to snap.
Right.
If you take the little bar that catches the mouse away, it's pointless.
Right.
If you take the platform away, nothing's going to hold down. It's just, there's nothing to hold
right.
it. Right. You need all five of these pieces for that mouse trap to work.
Right.
Right. Does it make sense? So
totally.
Same thing with the bacterial flagellum inside your body. You have to have all 30 parts of this bacterial flagellum for the bacteria to be able to spin and move and to go and for it to even work at all. Now, the thing is, this creates a huge, huge problem for Darwinian mechanisms because natural selection preserves or it selects things that have a functional advantage as they arise by random mutation.
Right.
Right. So the flagellar motor, it doesn't function unless all 30 parts are present. So natural selection cannot actually select the motor once it has arisen and functioning. It's supposed to be able to select, you know, produce the in like a step-by-step fashion. Like, okay, you start with the eye that can barely see a little mm-hmm. bit of light, and then it refines it, and now you can see more light, and now then you can see colors, and then you can see more contrast, and then you can see distance, you know, like a slow progression.
Right.
But there is no slow progression with a mousetrap. It's just you have all the pieces working or you don't.
Right.
Same thing with these bacterial flagellums. It's all working or it isn't.
And if it's not working, then evolution tells us that the body gets rid of it.
The body gets rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have these things. Listen very carefully here. We have these things in our body that could not have come about through natural selection, through evolution. It's impossible for these things to be developed through evolution. It just can't happen.
Right.
And so, yeah.
Very
I mean, we have to pay attention to that. We got some more stuff here about cumulative complexity and stuff. We're going to hit that, too.
All right. Let's do a Bible contradiction.
Bible contradiction.
We're a little late on the contradiction today, but hey, we're talking about natural selection and not naturalist selection and intelligent design and stuff. Very interesting.
We naturally chose not to do it until now.
Right. So anyway, our Bible contradiction today comes from Bible history. The story takes place as Israel was taking hold of the promised land. We run into a little contradiction in Deuteronomy, one that leaves us this question, were the Canaanites destroyed quickly? Or slowly.
Okay.
The Bible tells us two different things. Okay? The problem is Deuteronomy 9:3 says that Canaanites were destroyed quickly, but earlier passages, such as Deuteronomy 7:22, said it would be little by little. Would you like me to read these real quick?
Please do.
All right. Deuteronomy 9:3. Be assured today that the Lord your God is the God who goes across ahead of you like a devouring fire.
He's talking to Israel.
Yes.
About his enemies.
He will destroy them. He will subdue them before you, and you will drive them out and annihilate them quickly.
Quickly.
As the Lord has promised you. Now, earlier in Deuteronomy 7:22, It says, the Lord your God will drive out those nations before you little by little.
Little by little.
You will not be allowed to eliminate them all at once, or the wild animals will multiply around you. Hmm. Sounds like a problem.
Problem! Was it quickly or little by little? Okay. You know what, guys? I'm going to bang my head on the table for a little while. If you don't mind me, I'm just going to... Because what's going...
It's a good look for you.
What are you saying? Anyway, look, we have these rules, and that Norman Geisler, this famous apologist, came up with most of these rules about how to read the Bible. I added a couple of them. Mm-hmm. Mistakes people make when they think they found a contradiction. Here's mistake number 20. Not reading the Bible! just
you'll find tons of contradictions in the Bible if you don't read it.
Just read it! Okay, look, we're in chapter 7, and in verse 1 it says, we're talking about the Hittites, Girgashites, Amorites, Canaanites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites.
Say that again?
No. Okay? In chapter 9, verse 2, where it's... That was chapter 7, where it says little by little. Chapter 9, verse 2, where it says you'll drive them out fast, quickly... It says it's talking about, in verse 2, the Anakites.
Oh.
Just please read your Bible.
So what you're saying is that there were maybe several different tribes or different...
Subgroups
of the Canaanites.
Cities or something mm-hmm. like that. Yeah, these are different types of people. And so, yeah, I mean, if you just read it and you don't take these out of context, you'll see...
Oh, yeah. These are talking about two different types of people. Two different groups. Sense. That was actually a really easy Bible contradiction.
Yeah, that's the answer for our Bible contradiction today.
Bible contradiction.
Man.
Just read your Bible. I sound so incredulous.
Yeah, we need to make it harder on you, man. All right, back to intelligent design.
All right, so intelligent design, we've been talking about this part of it called irreducible complexity, mm-hmm. where these things... are so complex, but they're irreducibly complex. You can't take a piece out, right. Otherwise it'll fail. And this should be contrasted with cumulative complexity. William Dembski wrote a book, Intelligent Design. Have it right here with me.
Mm-hmm.
He says, given a pre-specified goal, you know, like an idea in mind, selection or evolution has no difficulty producing irreducibly complex system. But the selection operating in biology is Darwinian natural selection. And this form of selection operates without goals, has neither plan nor purpose, and is wholly undirected. In other words, hey, you have something that's irreducibly complex, like the mousetrap or the bacterial flagellum.
Right.
This is no problem as long as you can picture in your mind what you want to have happen and then create the things as you go. But if you can't picture in your mind what you want to have happen, you'll never get things
like
this.
There's no direction.
No, there's no direction, so you can't get things like this. Basically, a good way to think about this is to think about Scrabble tiles. Okay, let's say that we want to know, how do you detect this design? How do you know if something's irreducibly complex and it had to be designed, or whether it's just natural? By the way, William Dembski came up with this idea. He's got a PhD in mathematics and philosophy.
So he's smart.
He's very smart. And this idea has been around for thousands of years, kind of, but he really fleshed it out. Okay, we're going to talk about specificity and complexity. Okay. Something is specific if there's a very, very stringent purpose to it.
Right.
Something's complex if it's complicated.
Right.
Right. For example, let's say we have a whole bunch of Scrabble tiles, and they're all scattered across the room.
Mm-hmm.
And you walk up, and you see two Scrabble tiles next to each other, and they say N, the word an, A-N.
Okay.
Okay. Now, you're going to look at that. So is this very specific? Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, it's very specific. It's the word N, A-N.
It's a conjunction. No, thanks.
Is it?
Never mind.
Is it? Don't pretend like you know English. All right. Is it complex? No, it's not
right.
complex at
two
all.
Two letters.
It's just two letters. So, would we assume that this was designed by a person? No, not necessarily. I mean, you could throw
random.
A bunch of Scrabble tiles on the ground, and then the word N could come up automatically.
Could have been random.
All right. What if we saw a huge string of letters, B, B, W, E, K, J, F, E, I, L, W, K, J, E, I, F, O, F, 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 L, W, L, K, W, J?
I don't speak Swahili.
Okay. Don't pretend like you know Swahili. What are the odds of that happening? I mean, that's astronomical. The odds of those letters coming up in that exact order are super low. I mean,
right.
This is extremely complex string of letters.
Mm-hmm.
But is it specific?
Not very.
Not at all. I mean, it's meaningless. So we wouldn't assume it was designed. It's just totally random, right?
Right.
Okay, now, what if someone threw a whole bunch of Scrabble tiles in the room and you walked in and you saw the Scrabble tiles all lined up and it said, the Chiefs are an awesome football team.
That's
now,
not intelligent design.
That's not design. Is that complex?
It is very.
Yeah,
complex.
That would be very complex. Is it very specific?
It is very specific.
Super specific. Mm-hmm. So we know that a person put those Scrabble tiles there, right?
Right.
Because that cannot happen by chance. It just can't happen. And Dembski, in his book Intelligent Design, came up with the tools to determine whether or not that was the case. So if you're out there, grab Intelligent Design by William A. Dembski. Dembski is his last name. Dembski. And he goes through concept of how to detect whether something is designed or not.
Can we put this book up on the website?
So yeah, we'll throw a link up there on the website later this week when we put the show up there. So, but basically, let me answer a couple really quick objections to this.
Okay.
I'd love to talk more in depth about this and prove intelligent design further. But basically, we have to remember the concept here is there are things in our body and things in our universe that could not have arisen by chance because they just wouldn't have developed naturally. Someone had to have a goal in mind when these things were developed in our body. Okay. Now, sometimes this is called a science stopper. People say, oh, well, if you believe in this, you know, science will stop. And everyone's going to say, oh, well, God did it, and we're going to stop studying science. But actually, design helps people pursue scientific questions and ideas, especially in areas where evolutionary thought shuts down science. Now, this is totally contrary to what people are taught. But what I'm saying here is we view all things, intelligent design proponents, view all things as either natural scientific process or the handiwork of God. Now, both of these we want to know more about. We want to study all that we can about God's work and all that we can about natural processes. But evolutionary science disregards some things. For instance, junk DNA. We had all this DNA in our bodies that evolutionary scientists could not figure out what it was for, and so it was labeled junk DNA. It was supposedly remnants left over of our evolutionary trails that are now unneeded. But intelligent design proponents, we would not expect much junk DNA because we were saying, no, we were designed just right. And guess what? You know, in the late 90s, we discovered on lots of this stuff that was categorized as junk DNA. It's actually used for programming our growth and development as human beings. And so, you know, what we're saying is, look, evolutionary thought, or more specifically, Darwinian evolutionary thought, shuts down science sometimes. Intelligent design makes people want to study no more. Because you're looking at the handiwork of God, and you want to know this. Mm-hmm. Or maybe, you know, not even necessarily God, just some sort of designer. So that's the main point.
Okay.
So, hey, if you want to check out more, truthrevolution.tv. Whew, next week, we're going to be on this a little bit, kind of a side bridge, talking about whether or not we know spiritual stuff is real versus natural stuff.
Excellent.
TruthRevolution.tv. Hey, come to Revolution Church. We're starting at 10:15.
Yep.
So maybe we'll see you there today.
1111 West South. Keep asking questions.
TruthRevolution.tv. Have a truth revolution in your life.